This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan with Sumitra Selvaraj and Kelly Anisa. So before the break, we were talking about Nike's official announcement that finally their female athletes can get pregnant without being penalized.
Oh, ridiculous.
Obviously, we still have strong feelings about that. Now, in relation to our second story, we are asking you on Twitter.
Are you satisfied with the government's response so far to Zaki Naik? So 78% of you have said no, you're not satisfied. And 22% of you have said yes. Now, you can join that Twitter poll. Or you can take that Twitter poll at BFM Radio on Twitter, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900 to share your thoughts.
So we are asking you this because, you know, if you've been watching the news or reading the headlines, controversial Islamic preacher Zakir Naik has been in the headlines for the last few weeks, actually, for making a series of incendiary remarks against particular ethnic groups in Malaysia. The outcry started over. The outcry started earlier this month during a speech that he made in Kota Baru, over a few remarks that he made during the speech, actually, where he claimed that Malaysian Indians were more loyal to India's Narendra Modi government. This was then followed by another speech where, in response to calls for him to return to India, he said that the Malaysian Chinese were also guests in this country and that if he was asked to go back, they should go back first.
All right. For a bit of background, Zaki is an Islamic televangelist and is thought to have about several million followers worldwide. Zaki is originally from India but has been wanted by the Indian authorities since 2016 for hate speech and money laundering. So countries like the UK, Singapore and Bangladesh have banned him, actually. And meanwhile, he was granted a Malaysian PR in 2015 and has resided here since 2017. He continues to preach here and has a large following among the local Muslim communities.
Wouldn't I love to know who granted him that PR?
I'm sure lots of people have the same question.
Anyway, following his remarks on the Malaysian, Indian and Chinese communities, calls for Zakir's deportation have been rising from many quarters. With many Malaysians taking to social media to express their anger, the issue was brought up in Parliament on the 14th of August. Four ministers have officially demanded his expulsion. These are Communications Minister Gobind Singh Deo, Water, Land and Natural Resources Minister Xavier Jayakumar and Human Resources Minister M. Kulasekaran, Youth and Sports Minister Syed Saddiq, as well as MCA President Wee Ka Siong.
So one of the things that has caused a lot of anger was the delay in response from the government leadership. And, you know, this was seen as them being tolerant of him and his rhetoric. In particular, the lack of response from our Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. So finally, yesterday, Tun Mahathir made a statement where he said that it was quite clear, that's a quote, that Zakir had attempted to incite racial hate and that Zakir had overstepped the line with his remarks. Tun M also said that he backs police investigations against Zakir Naik.
About time.
Yeah, so as of now, Zakir faces investigations here under Section 504 of the Penal Code for intentional insult with intent to provoke a breach of the peace. He is also banned from speaking in public in seven states, which are Malacca, Johor, Selangor, Penang, Kedah, Perlis and Sarawak. Yet Zakir also continues to have his supporters, with hundreds of Malaysians attending his talks and thousands of views and comments online for his videos.
Yeah, so while plenty has been said about Zakir's remarks and whether he should be deported, that's not really what I wanted to talk about today. Instead, what I wanted to examine is the background to all of this. How and why does someone like him, how does he manage to get this kind of support? And what does this say about the kind of politics that we practice today? So to get some insight into this, I spoke earlier today to Professor James Chin, director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. So, Professor Chin, why is the rhetoric of someone like Zakir Naik getting an audience in Malaysia?
Part of it has got to do with the way our political system is run. So, basically, our political system is run along racial and religious lines. And somebody like Zakir Naik, who has been using race and religion in India for a very long time, he knows exactly what buttons to push. So, I suspect the sort of things he's been saying here in Malaysia are probably very similar to the sort of things he has been saying for many years through his Operation Called Peace TV and also his work in India. So a lot of the stuff that he said actually has a ready-made market in Malaysia. And the fact that he's a foreigner means that we bring the debate up to another additional level.
Mm. And in contrast, what is it about the political situation in India that has brought about his rise?
Well, India, as you know, if you look back at history, India basically, when the British left, they tried to create two separate countries, one for the Muslim community and one for the Hindu majority. So for the Muslim community, basically the British broke up the entire country and created a country called East and West Pakistan. For India, basically it became India. So from day one, they always had these religious tensions between the Muslim community and the Indian community. The British thought that they can get rid of this problem by creating two separate countries, one for the Muslims, one for the India. Well, of course, at the ground level, it was completely different. There was a huge group of Muslims who decided to stay back in India. So from then on, they always had this tension between the Hindu majority and the Muslim minority in India. And Zakir Naik, of course, it comes from the Muslim minority in India. And he's been very, very successful in promoting this idea of a Muslim minority in India being a persecuted class.
Mm, so this idea of victimization, why does that work in Malaysia?
It works in Malaysia partly because I think what we're seeing now is the rise of political Islam. So the Islamic community, not all of them, but part of the Islamic community in Malaysia is exerting themselves. I think the other key issue facing Malaysia, of course, is the way our constitution is written. So the way our constitution is written is that if you are classified as a Malay in Malaysia, you are totally constitutionally defined as a Muslim as well. So ethnic identity and religious identity in Malaysia is tied together as one if you are Malay in this country. And also coupled the fact that, that if you're part of the Malay community, the constitution said that you have a special position or what we call special benefits in the system. So all this is sort of built into our system. So as I mentioned earlier, our system is sort of mobilized along racial religious lines. So we have somebody like Zakir Naik who's really an expert in rallying up people on this issue. When he comes to Malaysia, he plays the same game that he's been playing for many years. So obviously, that's a ready-made market for him.
So is this something that we are seeing more of, not just in Malaysia, not just in India, but around the world, this idea of a politics of exclusion?
Yes, I think what we're seeing is not only the politics of exclusion. I think a proper term is really identity politics. We're not only seeing the rise in many parts of the world, but it's sort of the fastest rising stuff in Western democracy. This idea that, you know, certain groups are under race and everybody has to identify themselves with a certain political group. But I think in the Malaysian case, when we talk about exclusion, the reason why this comes up in Malaysia is simply because in Malaysia, the way the administration works or the way the governing system works, that we have a very clear line and the country is divided administratively between the Bumrung Trust and the non-Bumrung Trust. So the system itself reinforces identity politics in Malaysia.
That was Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute from the University of Tasmania. So it's ironic, isn't it, that the same identity politics that gives someone like Zakir Naik a platform in a place like India, where he builds on playing the victim, is then subverted and works here in the opposite way, where it's used to incite hatred or suspicion of a minority group. And that it isn't just, and it really isn't that different from this politics of exclusion that's being practiced in places like the US, where people are defined and boxed into groups based on, you know, their ethnicity, their religion, their places of origin.
Isn't that just stereotyping? How is the politics of exclusion, or what is the politics of exclusion? How is it different from stereotyping?
So politics of exclusion is a phrase, not to sound lecture-y, but it's a phrase that's become more popular now, particularly after the Trump administration, because it's a means of talking about people as being, you know, by belonging to a certain group, you then become, so you exclude people, you become threats just because you belong to a particular group, rather than your role as an individual or your contribution to society. So most significantly in the West, you see this being done to Muslims, where Muslims are tarred as being part of a uniform, homogenous group that's viewed as a threat. Of course, that is exactly what Zakir Naik, people like Zakir Naik play on, right?
It's the whole us versus them.
Us versus them. So exclusions, politics of exclusion is basically excluding people based on particular criteria that, yes, stereotype is exactly right, where you stereotype a whole group of people as being a particular thing, rather than viewing them as people with individual opinions and goals and dreams and contributions.
Yeah, you know, just this morning, I came across this video. I think it was sent, it was being passed around my neighborhood group, and it was a speech by a religious leader, I think, a local one, who was making some very hateful comments. And I have to say, it's a lot worse than what Zaki and I have said. This was actually, really, and I hate to say this, was calling for blood. That's how bad it was. And yet, we... You know, like just like you said, that some people have made far worse comments for this. And yet, when it comes to Zakir Naik, we are not responding with the same gusto that we would in any other case or if any other local person had done this.
But we are. So that's where I find troublesome, this whole concept of we, right? Individually, many people have problems with Zakir Naik. But the response needs to come from the government.
Yes.
The response needs to come from the powers that be.
Because right now it sounds like it's being condoned, like it's not a serious issue at all. Whereas if anyone else had said it, I think there would be a few ministers.
Anyone else had said, I think, particular statements against particular groups of people, I think it would have been a far... we have seen cases in the past where people were hauled up under the Sedition Act or under, intent to... I think it's incitement to hatred. And with Zakir Naik, it's taken a long time. It's taken a while before the government has chosen to act. And I think the question that a lot of people had was, why has it gone this far? Why was he allowed to keep saying these things until now?
And on that note, I've gone too far. Thun Mahathir's statement that, you know, Zakir Naik has gone too far, that he's crossed the line. It got me thinking, you know, I watched a movie last night, which was rather aptly titled, the South Korean movie Parasite. you know, in it, there's a very rather pivotal scene in it where one of the characters talks about another character who is in a different social class from him, who's in a different lower social class from him. And this character says, I'm all right with that other person in that social class as long as they don't cross the line. What is this line? Who defines this line? As you rightly pointed out, Kelly, people say some rather horrid things to each other here in Malaysia. Malaysians say awful things to each other. I have personally heard fellow Malaysians, also some in political power, who have crossed what I would consider a line over and over again. Where is this line? I would like to see it, please.
I feel like that line is moved around a lot depending on who you are.
Exactly. And that's really the point that I was trying to get at as well. And what Professor Chin was talking about earlier, where, you know, Zakir Naik really is just the perhaps currently the touch point around which a lot of these arguments are coalescing. But it's not like we've not heard this before. And it's not like we've not heard this before from Malaysians, from Malaysian politicians, as you said.
Which is why I find, and I know I'm going to sound awful for saying this, which is why I find this rhetoric of we all need to band together as a family. I don't know. Well, I don't know what the word for it is. I don't want to pour cold water on it. I don't want to say that, oh, you know, this is not... But it feels stale. It feels...
Because the question of how is it that someone like Zakir Naik can come into Malaysia and get so many people to support these kinds of comments and to think that there wasn't anything wrong with what he said, it means that there are already issues that we need to resolve, aren't there? You know, if you want to say that we are a family, which is what a lot of people have said, oh, we are a family, you can't come in and attack us. We're a pretty dysfunctional family, let's face it, right? We have issues of our own that we need to resolve.
Where is this family when we talk about the Khat issue? Where is this family when we talk about Chinese schools? Where is this family when we talk about riots and fighting in Indian temples? Mm-hmm. Where is this family when we talk about the decimation of Orang Asli rights?
Exactly. So I think while we... two wrongs don't make a right.
No,
you know,
don't.
We're not saying that what he said is acceptable, but no. I think that in addressing what he said, we also need to look at ourselves and why this happens in Malaysia in the first place, and what we as a society have allowed, and what each of us say in the privacy of our own homes, and how we teach our kids. Because I still know kids who go to school and hear racist remarks hurled at them from other children. Zakir, where are children learning these things from, right?
Zakir Naik is just a catalyst in a solution that's already imbalanced. That's
yes.
all he is.
It's everybody. And like you said, even if we refer to ourselves as a family, I don't think we can cherry pick when to use that, to be a
well
family
said,
and when
Kelly.
To not be a family.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because in real families, you don't get to pick when to
be. Stick together. That's not what we're doing here. We are picking who to side with, and unfortunately, as Malaysians, and there's something problematic with that.
Yep. We do have, I think, a few comments that came in both on our Twitter poll as well as through WhatsApp.
All right. So first up, our Twitter poll, we were asking you, are you satisfied with the government's response so far to Zakir Naik? 79% of you have said no. 21% of you have said yes. And on WhatsApp, we have Tan Mei Chu, who wrote in and said, no, send him back to where he belongs. And then Dennis Low said that Zakir Naik is understandable as he is Zakir Naik. And perhaps he relies on lies and rhetoric. But what is not understandable are educated people and preachers condoning him. Why are educated people believing him so much?
Mm-hmm. And, good question.
Yeah. And someone else responded on Twitter, on WhatsApp, and said that person, he is not satisfied with the government response. Bala wrote in and said, no, the government is not doing enough. If the government can't do much, don't be surprised if if citizens are upset or are unhappy with him, and take it out online, perhaps, I suppose.
So you can keep that conversation going. You can continue taking our poll. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We do need to take a quick break. We will be back shortly, but first, here's Don't Speak by No Doubt on BFM 89.9.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's the Daily Digest with Sharmila Ganesan, Sumitra Selvaraj, and Kelly Anisa. A quick wrap-up of the stories we discussed today.
Nike has announced that its female athletes will no longer be financially penalised for having a child. But is it really a case of too little too late? Alison Felix, their star athlete for the last 7 years, has said no to Nike's contract and moved on to a female-led brand.
And then we discussed the recent inflammatory remarks by Zakir Naik and what his brand of politics means. And we had a Twitter poll on that.
Yeah, so we asked you, are you satisfied with the government's response so far to Zakir Naik? 80% of you have said no, 20% of you have said yes. James wrote in on WhatsApp and said, why are we still having the same conversation now that we have changed the government? What has changed?
It would seem that nothing much has changed at the moment.
Yeah, and Madonna said on WhatsApp that the government should revoke Zakir Naik's PR status because of his controversial remarks on social media on racial issues.
I think that's an excellent point to wrap up the show.
I think so too. So if you've missed any part of this show, you can download our podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app, and also on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Earth Matters, Kelly will be sticking around to look at the highlights of the recently held International Congress for Conservation Biology. So we leave you now with Let's Stay Together by Al Green, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.